The Oak Ridge Symphony and Chorus is presenting their final concert of the season this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Oak Ridge High School Performing Arts Center. On the program is Mozart's Divertimento in D, Kürschel 136, and Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. And here to talk with me today about this concert is music director Dan Alcott. Welcome back, Dan. It's always great to see you.
Thank you, Melanie. It's great to be here.
Let's start with the Mozart. Why did you include this work on the program, and what is a divertimento anyway?
Well, I chose this because we needed something that we could fill out the concert with that was not going to tax us as much as the Beethoven. I'll tell you, that was my number one concern for the orchestra. We worked so hard on the Beethoven. And also, I wanted to provide context for the Beethoven. Mozart, a classical composer, was so different than Beethoven. And this is a rather simple work. It was actually written in his Salzburg days on a commission. And a divertimento is frequently music that's written to be played behind the scenes. And so this was actually kind of like party music. And it was written, I believe it was actually for the elevation of one of his friends in status somehow. I love the work, and I've done it several times. And I thought it would be a nice way to kind of start the palette for our audience to then move forward some 30 years and think, wow, how far the symphonic works and orchestra had come by the time Beethoven wrote his Ninth Symphony, which is in 1823 and 4.
And so, as you mentioned, the rest of the concert will be taken up with Beethoven's monumental Symphony No. 9. Have you ever conducted this work before?
I have. This is the second time I've done it in the last couple of years, actually. So it's nice to revisit it so quickly again.
Yeah. How much preparation goes into studying a work like this? I mean, tell us about some of the work you did to prepare for this.
Well, the first thing I did last summer, I spent a lot of time in the summer studying scores because I get to get away from some of my other administrative work, and I go away with my family. We are lucky. We get to go away in the summer. And so I actually read Schiller's Ode first. I had a great teacher who, whenever we were studying, you know, an opera, he would say the first thing you do is get a copy of the libretto without any notes and read through it because, you know, the text is important. And then I revisited the score, and I have various editions of the score, and this is what conductors do. You have to make decisions and get a sound picture in your head how you want things to sound. And then I go through and I revisit some of the decisions I made the last time. I think when I conducted this was 2013, maybe. And so I go through my score, and, you know, I make little marks in my score of decisions. And I thought, why did I do that? Or, and some of them are particular to the situation. And then, you know, as you conduct a work more often, you change some of your decision-making from experience. So it's really great to be able to revisit it. And the wonderful thing about this piece is it brings so many people together on stage who have a joy to perform. It's so much fun to perform for the orchestra and the choirs.
Right, yeah. Joining on stage will be several choirs, and four soloists. Who's joining you?
So we have a chorus, a resident chorus in Oak Ridge as a part of the Oak Ridge Civic Music Association. That's conducted by Seth Maples. So that's the heart of our chorus. And then the Pellissippi State Chorus, the Variations Chorus, under the direction of Megan Langford, is also joining us. And that's a collaboration that I had started on with her predecessor, Bill Brewer, about a year and a half ago. And when he passed away, Megan was game to pick up where we left off, and we'd wanted to do something together. And then we have some of the older members of Oak Ridge's Sound Company, which is a children's choir, but it's various levels. So we have 29 members of Sound Company, I think, joining us. And they are actually hosting a Swiss youth choir this week, who's on tour. And so when we started talking about the dates, Katie Wolf, who's a very good friend of mine and has sung with the Oak Ridge Symphony, in fact, Sound Company sang on our last concert, said, hey, I bet their diction would be great. And so we've got, I think, 40-some members of the Swiss Youth Choir that's going to be joining us. So we're going to have over 160 voices on stage, which is so much fun for a piece like this. It's really amazing how you go, you know, with a choir, it really takes critical mass to do a piece like this. And once you get above 90 singers or so, this piece sounds a lot better. And they have a fighting chance against the orchestra, which is having a raging good time in front of them also.
And the four soloists?
The soloist, Katie Wolf, is singing, Sarah Fitch, Andrew Skoog, and Kevin Doherty. So we've been able to mine some local talent, which is really a part and parcel of what the Oak Ridge Symphony does. This is one of the things that we like to do. We like to discover what's around us and celebrate the people who live in this part of the state. Yes, we bring in soloists. soloists, you know, nationally and internationally known soloists. But when we have a chance, it's fun to feature. There's so much talent around us as the rest of the world, you know, starting to figure out, you know, when you see a New York Times article about how cool Knoxville metro area
is. Right, yeah.
Well, we've been saying that all along, right? So this is a great opportunity and also a neat opportunity for people in this area to see some of their friends, especially these vocal soloists, really featured in a prominent work.
Yeah, and to our listeners, Kevin Richard Daugherty might be a familiar name. He, of course, is the host of the Early Morning Concert on the weekends.
Right.
So an opportunity to hear him sing. So what is the text that the choir is singing? What is the translation?
Well, the text is the Ode to Joy by Schiller, and it's something that Beethoven had read early on. It had really spoken to him, and it really is a call to kind of a universal brotherhood. This is an important time in Vienna and in Beethoven's life. 1820s, that's after the Congress of Vienna. Congress of Vienna was a major international gathering of political entities that came together after the Napoleonic War, basically, to try and settle down what had become a very warring landscape in Europe. Vienna was an interesting place at the time because Vienna's reaction to the Napoleonic revolutions was to really kind of become a little bit of what they thought was a benevolent police state. And even Beethoven felt this, that, you know, like serious music was deemed as a little dangerous or whatever. So Vienna was totally fascinated with Rossini operas and the waltz you know, things that were not troublesome. And so Beethoven even thought, you know, when he had written this massive new symphony, which the longest work to that date, it requires a choir and soloists, which is not what a symphony was. Mm-hmm. He actually, when he was going to premiere it, started shopping around in Berlin to see if they might want to premiere it. And some friends of his who knew about this work that he had been writing, they kind of gathered together and they said, no, 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 we want the premiere here in Vienna, which is so sweet. Because at this time, Beethoven was an older man in 55, not in great health, couldn't hear. And so there, they arranged for the premiere to be there. And there's a famous story that even at the premiere, he was sitting there shuffling the pages of the score after the performance. And the audience is standing on their feet clapping. And somebody just turned him around and showed, look, they love you. And, and he was happily surprised. So in Beethoven's life, that is a kind of a singular, wonderful event. There are a lot of events that were not so great.
The vocal writing for this work is notoriously awkward. How are the choirs handling the challenges of this music, and what are some of the challenges?
It is? No, I had the first combined rehearsal with the choirs the other day, and I said, so I know that the tessitura is high, and they all said, yeah. And I said, so let's all complain about it. Now they all said, oh, it's so high. I said, okay, that's enough of that. I don't want to hear anything else the rest of the time we're working on it. Beethoven was a little unsympathetic to, well, he was the same way with instrumentalists. In fact, when Beethoven wrote for you, when he wrote a particularly delicious part, he thought he was doing you a favor. He's like, here's this great part, you know, that the altos now get to jump down here and do this, that. And, you know, we think of it as a little bit difficult. But I really think we have a slightly wrong picture of Beethoven. We think of him more of the stormy side. And Beethoven even cultivated early on, he cultivated kind of an act as an introvert because he was so concerned about people finding out that he was deaf. And so for about a 5 or 6 year period, shortly after the turn of the century, he actually didn't want people to know he was deaf. So he just pretended that he was gruff and introverted. But this is a man you see in his writing. He's so affectionate and you know, he loves people, but he had this block with communication. So I think two things happen. I think one, his deafness lent him great imagination because it freed him from the limits of what people would tell him they could do. And I really think he went into his head and he thought about the possibilities of singing. Also, in America particularly, we have less tenors. We actually cultivate less tenors. And so the tenor voice is a little bit less common here, and it's a hard tenor part. If I have sympathy, which I don't, for the singers, it's for the tenors in the chorus.
several different elements are woven into the finale, from a recitative to a fugue to Turkish elements even. Could you talk about the complexities of the final movement a little bit?
Right. Well, the final movement is some 28 or 9 minutes long, and it actually, at the very beginning, has a declamatory opening which references all the previous 3 movements. So you can tell he's really trying to make a cyclical perfect ending for this piece. And the new thing is that he put a chorus and 4 soloists in the middle of a symphony. And, you know, that's a major development. There are other people making interesting developments at this time. Berlioz is about to write the Symphonie Fantastique, which is supposed to have 12 harps and as many bass players as you can fit on stage and this and that. So people were tinkering with what had been an established form for maybe 45 years or something like that. I think Beethoven predated Mahler in thinking that the entire world could be contained in a symphony. And so he does that, and he references popular styles. There's a variation with the tenor, which features what's called Janissary music, which is Turkish music, which in the classical world we replicate the Janissary, which is a military band style with triangle and bass drum and things. And this was supposed to scare people, by the way. The Janissary band were actually captured, converted Christians who made up the Janissary band that marched with the Turkish army. And they were supposed to scare you into giving up, basically. But it had been since 1680s, I believe, since Vienna had actually been occupied or under siege by the Turks. And so the danger had long passed, and what remained was the fascination with a foreign culture. And I think we see that in our times when we do have conflicting ideas about other cultures, but we certainly are curious about them, and the music seeps into our consciousness and curiosity, and we have so much involvement in world music right now. So the same thing was happening then. He wrote this beautiful operatic music. He writes a beautiful recitative or a recited opening for the baritone. There's a beautiful fugue for the entire choir. It's so exciting the way he's able to open and talk about joy, about brotherhood. He uses Schiller's words. And really, the ending is amazing. For such a great piece, how do you end it? And he does such a wonderful job, slows it down for kind of a last moment with the quartet of looking back, and then just joy. It really is a joyful, fun ending.
This is the last symphony concert of the season. Any hints as to what we can look forward to next season?
Well, I am happy to say that we've got a great season planned. One of the highlights of that season will be working with the violinist Rachel Barton Pine, who I recently worked with in another concert. And just the day after she left town with my other orchestra, I was on the phone with her management saying, we have to bring her to Oak Ridge. That's one of the highlights for me. And we'll continue to work at, interesting concerts that engage our specific community and engage community in a unique way. That's what the Oak Ridge Symphony and the Civic Music Association really tries to do.
Well, Dan, as always, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for stopping by.
I certainly appreciate being able to come to WOT. Thank you.
I've been chatting with Dan Alcott, music director of the Oak Ridge Symphony, about their season finale concert featuring Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. The concert is this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. and is being given at the Oak Ridge High School Performing Arts Center. More information on this event is available online at orcma.org or by phone at 483-5569.